Afternoon, it's about a half a minute before 12 o'clock. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. Translators in the villages at K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Karluk, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. Lovely day, 54 degrees, bit overcast with some sun poking through here and there. Humidity is down at 75% out at the airport, hardly any wind. East wind of about 6 miles an hour blowing. We have 10 miles of visibility. Scattered showers between 1 and 4 are called for today, but partly sunny with a high near 55. Calm winds become southeast 5 miles an hour this afternoon. Chance of precipitation is only 30%. 40% chance of rain tonight after 10. With increasing clouds, a low around 50. East winds move up to about 10 miles an hour. Rain likely tomorrow before 1 p.m., then showers after that, mainly between 1 and 4. Cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 55, northeast winds 15 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation increases to 70%. Chiniac Bay variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 in the afternoon with 2-foot seas. Tonight, southeast 10, becoming east 15 after midnight, 4-foot seas and rain. Tomorrow, northeast 24-foot seas and rain. Marmot Bay, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 this afternoon, 3-foot seas. Tonight, southeast 10, becoming east 15 after midnight, 3-foot seas. Northeast 15, 4-foot seas, and rain tomorrow.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut say beginning immediately they will require travelers to self-quarantine for 2 weeks after they arrive from states where coronavirus is spreading aggressively. We have an update from NPR's Brian Mann.
This region of the Northeast was once the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States. Tens of thousands of people in the area have died from COVID-19. Now that infection rates here are plummeting, governors say they can't risk another spike in cases caused by people traveling from states like Florida and Texas, where infections are surging. Ned Lamont is governor of Connecticut.
Places within some of these states where you have a positivity rate of 20, 30, 40%, if you come to Connecticut, you come to New York, you come to New Jersey, you come safely, and you follow the protocols, starting with a quarantine.
State officials here say they'll add other states to the mandatory quarantine list if more than 10% of their coronavirus tests come back positive. Brian Mann, NPR News.
A federal appeals court is allowing the Department of Justice to drop its criminal case against President Trump's first national security advisor, Michael Flynn. In a 2-1 ruling today, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a lower court to dismiss the case, even though Flynn had pleaded guilty to lying to prosecutors in connection to the special counsel's probe into Russia's election interference and ties to the Trump campaign. After switching lawyers, Flynn accused the FBI of setting him up. Senate Democrats have blocked consideration of a Republican bill to overhaul policing practices. Democrats wanted bipartisan talks before allowing debate to begin, but Republicans argued they should have tried to change the bill, not block it. Here's NPR's Susan Davis.
The legislation was sponsored by South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, the only Black Republican in the Senate. It would encourage police departments to end practices such as chokeholds and no-knock warrants, but would not explicitly ban them. Democrats said it didn't go far enough to address racial inequalities in the criminal justice system, and they were backed up by the nation's most prominent civil rights groups, who opposed the GOP bill as a, quote, menial, incremental approach. The House is scheduled to vote Thursday on competing legislation crafted by Democrats, but with the Senate unable to agree to even debate its bill, any action on police reform is likely stalled, at least through the November election. Susan Davis, NPR News, Washington.
A grand jury in Glynn County, Georgia, has indicted Travis and Greg McMichael and William Roddy Brine in the February death of Ahmaud Arbery. Arbery, who is Black, was jogging through a neighborhood in Brunswick when he was confronted by the McMichaels, who are white and shown in video being shot and killed by Travis McMichael. Greg McMichael was in the same pickup truck, and Roddy Brine was following behind in another vehicle, filming the altercation. The Dow's closed down more than 700 points, ending the day at 25,446. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak. a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Good afternoon. For businesses in downtown Kodiak, the Silver Muse was to be the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel. After a season of cruise ship cancellations, the ship was scheduled to pull into the city dock on September 11th, the last and only cruise ship of the season. Somehow she had escaped the cancellations caused by the spread of the coronavirus. But hope faded yesterday when Kodiak's port agent Nick Szabo got word from the cruise line agencies of Alaska that the sailing had been canceled along with the rest. Silver Muse is billed as an ultra-luxury ship, which can accommodate more than 500 passengers. Had they materialized, it would have ended a long tourism drought. Amy Williams, who heads up Discover Kodiak, said the fallout is more widespread than it might appear.
It affects especially our downtown area businesses a lot, but then something I think that some folks might not be thinking of is the amount of businesses that do shore excursions with the cruise ship.
From her office at the harbor, Williams said she had a window into how cruise ship passengers support a variety of businesses that offer bear viewing tours and more.
There's companies who do walking tours, and then something that we see, really because of our location, is all of the traffic that the Kodiak History Museum gets and the Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center.
Williams said, had it not been for the outbreak of COVID-19, the visitors industry was poised for a successful summer. Williams will be a guest on The Lowdown, which airs tomorrow morning on KMXT. Travelers entering Alaska by land or sea from out of state are required to complete COVID-19 testing procedures and travel declaration forms, state officials said this weekend. These requirements have already been in place for about 2 weeks in several Alaska airports as part of the state's Health Mandate 10, which addresses interstate and international travel. Here's Jeremy Zydek from the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management.
We wanted to make sure we had a process for those travelers that come over land or by sea to comply with Health Mandate 10, give them good information and give them the resources that they need to be in compliance with these necessary health precautions.
Sadek said the state is anticipating more people driving over the border and landing in ports over the summer months. Travelers driving into Haines, Skagway, or Beaver Creek will receive a travel declaration form and a testing voucher from U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. Forms can be submitted by email, and travelers will then be contacted with follow-up information and testing instructions, says Zydek. Maritime port procedures vary between communities. According to the EOC, some communities are considering mobile screening facilities while others are relying on harbor masters to direct incoming vessels to testing sites. Zydek said similar to land travelers, mariners will be given travel declaration forms and testing vouchers and pointing to their nearest testing sites. The EOC recommends checking in with local harbor masters prior to arrival to understand local screening and testing requirements. Whether traveling by land, sea, or air, it's primarily on the traveler to follow through with screening procedures.
We are trying to educate Alaskans so they can recognize that complying with the mandates are really in their best interest, in the best interest of their friends and family members and their community.
Zydek said they've seen an overwhelming willingness from travelers to comply with health mandates. Currently, the state doesn't have numbers on how many people have been screened entering Alaska by land and sea. 12 new cases of COVID-19 were announced on Monday by the city of Dillingham, community's largest single-day case count. City said all of the people who tested positive work for the same seafood company. After they tested positive on the sixth day of quarantine, they were moved to isolation facilities at the company's closed campus in Dillingham. Seafood company is testing all employees before they get to Dillingham. That's followed by two more rounds of testing while in quarantine, according to the announcement. KDLG reached out to the city to confirm which company the cases are with, but they were declined to be disclosed that information. In April, Dillingham City and Tribe asked the governor to consider closing the fishery, citing the region's limited health care capacity. Free walk-in testing is available in the community at the Capstone Clinic in the Dillingham Harbor. Although many Alaskan natives on Kodiak Island are busy catching and putting up fish right now, many are also making plans for the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, scheduled for the third week of October in Anchorage. But due to the COVID-19 crisis, AFN organizers say the state's largest convention may be different than in past years. AFN said meetings are underway with its executive board of directors, state health officials, and representatives from the Denai Center to discuss how the convention might take place if members aren't able to gather in person. AFM Communications Director Jeff Silverman said the health and safety of AFN members, conference presenters, and the public is a top priority. Silverman expects plans to be announced sometime in August. Rita Stevens, who serves on the board of directors for the Koniag Native Corporation, has mixed feelings about the news.
I know I've heard some of the elders say, well, it's so important that we be safe and keep our villages safe, but it's a time when we come together, and the big emphasis with AFN is to not only learn the political and legislative issues, but to definitely reconnect with families and friends.
But Stevens said elders have good reason to be worried because they've heard many stories about the Spanish flu epidemic, which swept through the Alaska between 1918 and 1919.
In the Spanish flu, people were wiped out. Villages were wiped out, and there were many orphans left. My great-grandfather and great-grandmother died quite young from the Spanish flu here.
Even so, if AFN turns out to be a virtual gathering this year, Stevens said, it still won't be quite the same.
What I love are the dancers from the different regions, too, with their regalia and seeing how beautiful their dress is. It's all very visual, and it's just flat on a screen. It's just not the same thing, and it's using all of your senses really come together when you are experiencing that in person.
But if the convention becomes a virtual conference, Stephen said she's curious because, as it's been a pioneer in Alaska for broadcasting live events. AFN has been a pioneer in Alaska for broadcasting live events. Stevens does worry that some rural communities won't have the broadband capability to fully participate, but says outlying communities on Kodiak are ahead of the game in many ways because the native corporations and tribal organizations are used to meeting by video and teleconference, as well as applying new technology in creative ways to transcend their geographical isolation. Stevens also hopes to hear soon about plans for the Elders and Youth Conference, which takes place immediately before AFN, a gathering that also has widespread participation from Kodiak Island. First Alaskans Institute, which organizes the event, said it also is in discussions about how to cope with the COVID threat. Carla Booth of First Alaskans said, like AFN, it's also carefully considering its options and will announce a decision once they are fully weighed. Chinese state media claimed last week that the coronavirus was found on chopping boards used for imported salmon. Those rumors halted European salmon imports to China. While that could affect the market for Alaska salmon, experts say this season coronavirus is creating much bigger problems. KDLG's Sage Smiley took a look at how the pandemic is affecting the salmon market and has this report.
Let's hope this is one hell of an anomaly.
That's Gunnar Knapp, Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. The market for salmon this year is in flux. Knapp says that's due to functional hurdles.
If you sort of want to categorize the bad news, the biggest factors are the sheer operating logistics for this industry in dealing with this virus and keeping the workers safe. That's one huge complexity. And the second is the drastic drop off in restaurant consumption. And the third is the drastic decline in people's incomes. Those are the three major hits.
In a normal year, most of the uncertainty in the salmon market comes from the run itself, like how the harvest compares to the previous year and how processors will keep up.
Heck, every year brings surprises in salmon markets and salmon fisheries.
But with the COVID-19 pandemic this year, the market faces uncertainty on both the supply and demand sides. That means a lot of things are up in the air, making everything more difficult to predict. Researcher Brett Watson from UAA says one indicator can be found in the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, which lists permit prices.
CFEC is reporting about a $13,000 slip in Bristol Bay permit price sales from April to May. And so what that says to me is that fishers' short-run and long-run expectations have kind of decreased their value for what they're expecting to get out of the fishery.
That drop has brought permit prices back to where they were in early 2019, a change from the steady rise in prices over the past 3 years. The range of prices is also twice as large as it's been in years. Several Bristol Bay processors have reported cases of COVID-19 since processing workers started arriving in the bay. As the run picks up and the fleet starts catching fish, there are also questions about how those outbreaks will affect processing capability.
I saw that there was a report just a few minutes ago that there were another 12 positive confirmed cases in Dillingham. And that's going to pose real challenges to the processors as they try to figure out how to engage in their process safely. And that can impose real cost for them.
To summarize, on the supply side, the run is starting a little weak. Processors are taking on massive preventative costs to try and stave off plant outbreaks. Those costs might take the form of a lower base price for fishermen or higher retail price for consumers. We don't know much yet about fishing effort compared to last year or processing capacity, which adds another level of uncertainty. On the demand side, the industry is facing a global recession, reduced restaurant demand, lower household incomes, and lower farmed salmon prices, as well as that hiccup in the Chinese market for farmed salmon. That could be an indicator for the wild market. Does everything point to disaster? Gunnar Knapp, the UAA professor emeritus, isn't predicting anything.
There's a lot of not so great indications about the market going into the season. But in the longer run, there's sort of a good news story.
The long-term trend, Knapp says, is an increasing demand in the U.S. for salmon in general and wild salmon in particular.
The basic thing is, you still this tremendously wonderful fish resource if it's well managed and well marketed and well handled and Mother Nature willing.
Despite all the uncertainties facing the market this season, Knapp says they're almost all tied to the pandemic. If Bristol Bay weathers the economic storm this year, he says, hopefully the market will continue to improve. In Dillingham, I'm Sage Smiley.
Thank you, Sage. There's a new little segment from the American Homefront Project about renaming Confederate statues.
Bates's. When Larry Wright was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, the name of the base wasn't a big topic, even among black soldiers like him.
We didn't talk about it a lot, but we heard here and there that it was a Confederate general, and it was a confusion because we said, well, how'd they get the name bases after generals that did not win the war?
Generals who were fighting for slavery and a war against the U.S. Army. But times have changed, and in a big way. And Wright, now a minister and Fayetteville, North Carolina City Council member, says Bragg and the other bases across the South need to reflect that. They don't all need to be renamed for black military heroes or prominent black leaders, but some should if they're going to bear the names of Americans.
There needs to be a diversity of names that is chosen that reflect the country, reflect our communities in which we live, probably one of the most diverse countries in the world, and that would do us proud.
Joseph Gladhar, who teaches military history at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, says Braxton Bragg was a poor namesake, even beyond the central issue that he fought against the U.S. to defend slavery. A slave owner in civilian life, he was tactically competent, but a terrible leader, cantankerous and widely hated by the men who served with him.
I wouldn't rank him. He wouldn't make a list unless you had to include, say, 500 or 300 or something. But if you asked me to give you the 10 best officers in the Confederate Army, he wouldn't be in there, or 20.
Part of the explanation is the general charged with approving names for new installations in the buildup for World War I sought short words to reduce the burden of paperwork. Picking new names now might not be as simple. Anthony Shore founded Operative Words, an agency that helps develop names for companies and products. He says professional name developers have to accept that people have subjective and sometimes idiosyncratic reactions to names.
So it may be that not every name could please every person. That is a possibility. But we certainly know that some paths are more likely to lead to a broader acceptance, and other paths are likely to diminish that broad acceptance.
Shore said the nation is in the middle of a sea change in which tolerance for racially insensitive names appears to be ending. He cited Quaker Oats' decision to change its Aunt Jemima brand. For the bases, he said good options could include people who never served in the military, but whose lives embodied shared American values. Or it may be more productive to move away from people's names entirely and instead think about ideals or attributes.
There's symbols of America that would likely be less divisive and less likely to have unsavory associations with their history. You know, we have the USS Constitution, for example. Could something like that also be applied to a military base? And then, of course, we have geography. Our country is home to countless places of inspiring and majestic natural beauty. And surely that could be a productive resource for names that every American could be proud of.
He said a good practice in naming things is to listen to all the key stakeholders and walk them through the implications of potential names.
Because when you're presenting names, what you're really doing is you're presenting potential futures. And so my job when I present names is to help everyone in the room see what that future might be if they go with any one of those names.
And for Southern military bases, the nation may be about to move into a new future. This is Jay Price reporting.
Apologize for that intro. My brain just worked in reverse somehow. The bases, not the statues. That was a project from the American Homefront Project, receiving support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska Fishtopia is a fishing wizard with a social side. More after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
Alaska Fishtopia brings previously scattered statewide sport fishing info together for the first time right to your mobile phone.
Literally everything that you need to know about fishing in Alaska, whether you're on the Kenai Peninsula or you're in Kodiak, wherever you're at, you have all of the resources for fishing together.
Britt Lewick is Fishtopia's marketing director.
And then you can also download the reg books so they can all be sitting on your phone. You don't have to be connected to the internet to view them. And then you can also check out, there's like a fish info area. You select your regions. You can see every kind of species of fish that you can fish for in Alaska. And then within that, you can see how to handle the fish. How do locals fish for this kind of salmon? And then a really, really big piece of the app is the map feature, which has multiple layers. And you can check out tides. What are the currents looking like? What does marine weather look like? What are really good times to fish for halibut?
Alaska Fishtopia also has a social component.
The last piece that really kind of ties together this entire app is it brings in like a social aspect where you can post pictures of the fish that you're catching and you can stay connected with local guides that have opportunities for you to jump on a boat if they have an open seat. And then we're also promoting events and entertainment. So when I'm done fishing for the day and I want to go grab a bite to eat and maybe listen to some live local music, where can I go? So it's just bringing the entire fishing community together in an app.
Alaska Fishtopia was created by Jim Voss of Kenai. Fishtopia costs just $1.99 a year, and members can win big prizes all summer.
If you have the app, I'm on Instagram, and I'm posting questions like, hey, if you want to win a CTO membership, look up how many fish were counted on this day in 2017. All they have to do is go into their fish count, check the river, look at the number, and then just DM me the number, and then they're entered to win.
Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch. Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
First, I'll give you a weir count from Chignik yesterday. Almost 6,000 reds went through the weir yesterday. In Karluk, 353. The Iyakulik, 15,483. Sockeye, 106. Chinook. Sockeye through Dog Salmon, 3,235. Adult sockeye, 3,028. Sockeye through Fraser Lake, 108. Upper Station, 2,821. Litnick, 607. The Buskin, 181, for a total of 3,646 fish through the weir at the Buskin. There's an emergency announcement in regards to closure of subsistence salmon fishery through the Karluk area. If you're going to be subsistence fishing in that area, I would suggest you check out the website, get more information. It's fairly lengthy. I don't have time for it right now. 54 degrees here on Signal Hill with an east wind of 6 miles an hour blowing and 10 miles of visibility. It's the 24th of June. As today, we're going to have some scattered showers this afternoon, partly sunny. Other than that, with a high near 55, calm winds become southeast, 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. 40% chance of rain tonight after 10 with increasing clouds. Tomorrow, rain likely before 1 with showers after that. Temperatures in the mid-50s again. 70% chance of rain tomorrow. I'm going to play this.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 3, date issued 10 a.m. on June 19th. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, June 21st, to 9 p.m. Monday, June 22nd in the following areas. In the east side Kodiak District, the northwest Afognak, Pauls Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, and the Big River and outer Kukak Bay sections of the mainland district. The following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Saturday, June 20th. The Duck Bay, Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Sunday, June 21st to 9 p.m. Monday, June 22nd in the following areas: at Cafthea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Saltry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. Closed waters are reduced until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 20th in the following areas: in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. And as previously announced, the following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are currently reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. And in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour quarter phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The synopsis for the North Gulf Coast and Kodiak Island waters: is a 998 millibar low, 190 nautical miles south of Kodiak, moves 150 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island at 1,003 millibars tomorrow night. Chiniac Bay this afternoon, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 10 this afternoon with 2-foot seas, southeast 10 becoming east 15 after midnight, 4-foot seas and rain tonight, northeast 20, 4-foot seas, rain tomorrow. Marmot Bay this afternoon should be southeast winds of 10 knots with 3-foot seas. Southeast 10 becoming east 15 after midnight, 3-foot seas tonight. Northeast 15, 4-foot seas and rain tomorrow. In the Kodiak area, we are due a high tide at 5:43 this afternoon of 6.93 feet. Evening low tides just before 11 o'clock, 2.55 feet. In the west side, the high tides just before 6 o'clock tonight, 13.88 feet. And the evening low tides at 11:46, 2.8 feet. That's the Uganic tide. Information, 5:10, sun came up, 11:15, it'll go down tonight. It's 18 hours and 6 minutes of daylight. There is a Zoom community sit tonight at 7:30 as part of Kodiak History Museum's online exhibit, Hold an Introduction to Mindfulness. Community members are invited to join an exhibit partner, Monica Claridge, for a community sit on Zoom. Begins with some short discussions about mindfulness and concludes with a guided mindfulness breath exercise. No experience necessary. Everyone is welcome. Great opportunity to pay attention to the moment and share some time with people in the community while keeping each other safe. More information is on their Facebook page or on the Kodiak History Museum's website. There is a Zoom room trivia contest, but it's been changed at the library tomorrow night. Instead of the normal time, is it going to be at 6 o'clock? Check the library for more information.